Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Thank you very much. We're a REIT, so we're a real estate investment trust. We invest specifically and only in supermarket bricks and mortar with very long leases to primarily the big four, Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrison. If you buy the right supermarket property, there is a tremendous value proposition right now within the market, which we are trying our best to capture. We'll aim to take you through that over the course of the next 20 minutes. Supermarket Income REIT is a relatively new company. We IPO'd on the London Stock Exchange, so we're LSE main market listed. In July last year, we raised £100 million. We've done two further equity raises since, and our current market cap's around £190 million. Total portfolio, £317 million, the rest made up of financing we put on the portfolio. So without further ado, introduce you to Ben, and Ben will take you through our investment strategy.
The strategy is to source index-linked income from what we call omnichannel grocery stores. So let me just take you through what that means. So for every investment that we make, we're looking for three things out of the store. So here we're buying the freehold of a supermarket site, which is leased to a supermarket operator for the long term. So the first thing we're looking for is supermarkets that fulfill online delivery. So what we mean by that is if you go to one of our sites, they will almost all have customers in the front shopping with trolleys and baskets, but actually really importantly, they'll have vans leaving from the back doing delivery to the local area. So that's really critical to us because it's future-proofing against the growth in online because we really believe in the growth in online grocery. We're also looking for top trading stores. So we have a very long history of strong relationships with the operators. We used to sit by their side advising them. I've closed about £4 billion of supermarket leasing transactions, mostly working for the supermarket operators. So most people in property are connected at the property level within the supermarkets. We're connected at the board level, so we know them from chairman, CFO down. That gets a lot of things done, and we get a lot more information than most of the other people in the property sector about these kinds of assets. So we're only buying strong trading stores. And then we're buying large flexible sites. So our typical site will look like 10 acres of plot, of which about 2 acres is the store, the rest of it's car parking. Why is that important? Well, it's important because we need these big sites to fulfill online for a start, but also, interestingly, there's a lot of excess car parking now because a lot of the traders switch to online. For example, our Thetford store does 25% of its turnover as home deliveries. It means there's car parking available. We can help to develop that, use our shareholders' capital to do interesting things in conjunction with the operator, like putting drive-through restaurants onto the stores, onto the car parks, and actually making sustainability investments in the stores. It's very high up the agenda of the operators to put solar panels on the top, combine heat and power by the side, and reduce the carbon footprint of the stores. And we can deploy shareholder capital to do that and make very attractive returns. What that means is because we can buy these stores at attractive prices, we can pay a 5.5% dividend yield. So we've existed for a year already. We've already paid 5.5p in dividends against our 100p IPO price. And we've actually just announced as well that the quarterly dividend's gonna go up by inflation from the January payment. That's because all of our leases are linked to RPI. So we have contractual rental growth in our underlying income. And then we've got capital upside potential, partly as a result of that growing income, which should result in gradually increasing values for the assets, but also because we can do interesting things on the sites to add value to the sites, like the drive-through restaurants and the sustainability. So just in terms of our portfolio, we've got 6 assets right now valued at almost £320 million. They're valued at approximately a 5% yield, so we have a little bit of leverage in the structure, just over 40% loan-to-value debt, which means that after costs, we can deliver that 5.5% dividend, actually be 5.6% next year. We've got very long leases. So we've got a weighted average lease term of 19 years, which is extremely long in real estate space. So very secure income. And all of the rent reviews are RPI. The vast majority of them are annual reviews. We've got one that's a 5-yearly, but it means that we've got that certainty of increasing rentals. In a property market where actually most other sectors are seeing the potential for rental decreases in office and other retail. And we've got 3 of the big 4 tenants on leases now. We've got 4 Tesco's a Sainsbury's in Ashford in Kent, and we just acquired a Morrisons in Sheffield. And then this is just to take an example of one of our assets. So we own the Sainsbury's in Ashford in Kent, just on the M20. It's very close to the centre of town too. It has 20-year lease term on it with annual RPI rent reviews. What's really interesting about this site is it's absolutely enormous. It's 17 acres of site. So there's lots of things that we're planning on doing with this, with Sainsbury's. Things like drive-through restaurants. We're in discussions about potential for GP surgeries, those kinds of uses on the car park, which are very complementary to the supermarket use. And this store is a really critical part of Sainsbury's online fulfillment in the Kent area. That's one of the really important things that we look for. And then just coming back to the omnichannel theme, the chart on the right is trying to show you that larger stores still dominate volumes in UK grocery. So everybody sells the vast majority of what they sell through larger stores, and actually those are by far the most profitable channel for the grocers. However, the fastest growing piece is the online piece. Now, what most people don't realise is actually the vast majority of the online is actually fulfilled through the larger stores. When people think about online, they think about an Ocado shed with lots of mechanisation in it. No, actually, Tesco's, who are the global leader in online groceries, so they're actually number one in the world in online grocery sales. They actually fulfil 90% of their online grocery deliveries through a store or from a store. They don't use specific sheds for doing it, and we'll come onto that in just a moment as to why. So what we're doing here is we're taking the most dominant channel in grocery and we're combining it with the fastest growing channel, and those are the ones that we want to invest in. And then you combine that with a very long lease with contracted rental RPI growth. We think it's a really attractive investment proposition. Coming back to that point around why they use stores to fulfill online grocery. So grocery is very different to non-food in the way that it works for online. So it's really different to books and toys and tablets and fashion and all the things that can go through your letterbox. When you start thinking about low margin perishable goods, the really important thing is being close to your customer. It's all about the last mile. So the map on the left is the Tesco online fulfillment network in the UK. So this is a proprietary map that we've developed. So we've researched which stores they have that do online fulfillment. We don't think anyone else in real estate has this data. The red dots are the only online-only facilities that they have. And the last one of those they built 5 years ago. So Tesco's, who are the global leader in online grocery, which is the fastest growing segment in grocery, haven't bothered to build another dedicated online shed for 5 years. And the reason for that is that the average cost of fulfilling an online delivery is about £15. And out of that, £5 is the picking and packing. So that's the bit you can save money on through having fancy robots and a very expensive shed. £10 of £15 is the drive time and delivery. So as soon as you start to proportionately add to the drive time, you absolutely kill any gains you made in efficiency on the picking and packing. So outside of London, it makes no sense whatsoever to build a dedicated shed to do online grocery. It makes even less sense when you consider that nobody actually makes any money out of doing online grocery. They actually really want you to come to the store. And so, you know, if you have an online-only grocery business model, it's actually practically impossible to make any money out of that business. So much better off using your existing facility, which was originally built in the ideal drive time location for people to come to the store in order to deliver out of that store to the neighbouring population. So these are the ones that we're targeting. So you can see Tesco's has got a 40% share of UK online groceries. And because we've got the highest penetration rate in the world in online grocery, that also makes them the global leader in online groceries. The map on the right is our database of Sainsbury's facilities, and it's the same story. They've only got one online-only facility, and that supports London. London's under-penetrated with supermarket space, so they need facilities to deliver into London, plus the population density in London is just off the scale compared to the rest of the country. So just taking the, you know, Tesco Croydon on the left, we just put on there because that's the one that my Tesco.com deliveries come from to get to me in Wandsworth. It has 5.6 million people living within a 60-minute drive time of it, which is fairly unique globally. Everywhere else in the country, that number would be in the tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, possibly, and that's why you use the existing store.
This kind of explains the Ocado business model as well. Ocado has no aspiration to be a national grocer. Ocado needs to hit the large population densities with their sheds all around the world. So whether it's Paris or it's Stockholm or it's the US with Kroger now, wherever you have very, very large population densities, the shed makes sense. Where you don't, you need a Tesco or Walmart-like distribution network.
And then it's not just Tesco's and us who are following this model. Steve will just take you through on the next slide. Everyone worldwide is adopting this model for grocery.
Yeah, we're very comfortable with the future model of grocery for the UK, and it looks like this. But we also like to get ratification of that for what the global grocery sector is doing. And to actually get a feel for the global future model of grocery, you've got to look at Amazon for the US, Alibaba to a certain extent for Asia. So what have Amazon up to? Very publicly, obviously, they had a huge pivot because they started with an Ocado-like model, Amazon, 10 years ago in 2007, of delivering fresh goods from a shed. After 10 years, the very famous Amazon Fresh story was they were still throwing away more bananas than they sold every day. So very hard to get efficiency to that business model, and it was leading to huge, huge losses, which then triggered the massive strategic pivot at Amazon and the purchase of Whole Foods for $14 billion. Now, Amazon's strategy going forward for grocery is separate and distinct from their strategy for broad household goods that fit through your letterbox. And Amazon's strategy for grocery is omnichannel, using that Whole Foods store network throughout the US to be both a physical store and to deliver and to offer click and collect. So that's the US model down. What about Asia? So you've got to look at Alibaba. What's Jack Ma up to? So Jack Ma, similar to Amazon in 2012, launched an online-only grocery business. Jack Ma pivoted much more quickly than Bezos, though. By 2016, he started experimenting with a physical grocery store, full of technology, but which offers click and collect and home delivery. Interestingly, Jack Ma's stores will only offer home delivery of grocery if you live within 5 minutes of the store, but it offers a full omnichannel service. This is their new strategy, and only just Alibaba announced they're going to open 2,000 of these HEMA omnichannel grocery stores through China. Now, Tesco have about 365 of these, and they're the single largest grocer by volume for online in the world. To have a plan to open 2,000 of them is staggering, but it shows you what this global convergence on the future model of grocery, and it's very, very different to the rest of broader retail. Walmart, we always put on as an interesting aside. Walmart were slow to wake up and smell the online coffee, but they're getting there and they're catching up quickly, and they've realized they have a huge structural advantage over Amazon. They have that store network throughout the US. They're focusing very much on click and collect, and are just hired the head of Tesco.com, actually, to come and grow their online business. So a little bit of data, a little bit of looking at our market and the value proposition we talked about right up front. So this graph shows you, in the blue dotted line, distribution warehouses, because there's a massive play in property for online bricks and mortar. So any online bricks and mortar that services, the likes of Amazon or the likes of the home delivery, has screamed tighter in price. So that motorway junction shed, which is now an Amazon shed, used to trade at 8% yields only a few years ago. That now trades at 4% and change yields. Then you look at all property, which is the dotted green line, and that's all commercial property. That's also trading pretty much now all-time tights. So what about our supermarkets? So our supermarkets are shown here by the solid blue line. They've been somewhat thrown out with the retail bathwater, in that they've thrown the baby out by mistake, in that, yes, we agree, and we wouldn't fight Amazon if you're Toys R Us or anybody trying to do, standard physical goods. And so retail is out of vogue. Supermarket prices have definitely cheapened up, and to the point where, sheds trade through supermarkets. And from a basic property fundamentals perspective, your supermarket tends to be at edge or in town and a high-quality building. Your shed is usually at a motorway junction, which used to be a field, and is basically a concrete slab with steel and metal supports around the side. So that's just odd and bizarre from our perspective, and as market observers starts to trigger buy signals. And then you look and you say, well, actually, you can plot that chart back, then you're not quite at 2008 wides in supermarket property, but you're not far off. So we think there's a real value proposition as people actually realize that grocery is different. Supermarkets are doing very well, and actually that they shouldn't trade quite where they are. And then always get overly excited about this slide, my favorite slide that we go through. So we mentioned several times that all of our leases have RPI. So each time we have a rent renewal on our store, the leases can only go up in terms of the rent we get, they can't go down. And they go up just by a formula, which is based on RPI or inflation. Now there's caps and floors there, But basically, each year we source RPI, we source inflation from our leases. And we have 19 years worth of leases, and those leases are unbreakable under UK law. So how else do you source RPI? Well, obviously the gilt market or gilt linkers is the obvious comparison. Now, this is not apples for apples. Gilt's the UK government. We have Tesco's and Sainsbury's and Asda's and Morrison's credit spreads in there. But you can see historically that spread between where supermarkets, again in blue, have traded versus index-linked gilts, both paying you annual inflation for long dated, has been in around 3%. That spread's now nearly 7%. So said another way, if you do want some inflation protection in your portfolio, you get paid 7%, 700 basis points running per year to source it from supermarket leases rather than index-linked gilts. That to us is just a crazy value proposition. Then the market at large. So it's actually quite a big liquid market, just to frame it. So UK commercial property sector is about £900 billion of total value. Supermarkets are a big part of that. They represent about £100 billion of total value. So about 10% of the overall commercial real estate market. We are actually cherry picking and top slicing. We're not saying all supermarkets are good. We're saying if you can invest in that omni-channel, future-proof supermarket and a performing store with a nice RPI lease on, they don't all have RPI leases, that's your top slice cherry pick. So we think we've got about a 10 billion total market to aim for. And we think over the course of time, we could be about a billion of that. But just to give you a flavor about how much of this stuff trades, and here we have the buyers on the left and the sellers on the right. So you can see supermarket income REIT is always already the biggest buyer in the sector. We bought 255 million last year. So we dominate this sector. Anybody looking to sell a supermarket comes to us first. But the important message is 1.2 billion traded last year. And we saw every one of these supermarkets before they came to market. Everything we bought has been off market on a quiet bilateral discussion. You know, we passed on a billion just to demonstrate our cherry picking strategy, and we bought 255 million. The sellers, by the way, tend to be insurance companies affected by Solvency II. Solvency II made, from a regulatory cap perspective, long lease property assets a capital inefficient asset to hold, and or people with large property retail funds. If you have an open-ended fund, open-ended is never a great way to play property through the cycle, but they have a lot of retail in there. They can't sell their out-of-town shopping park or their Debenhams portfolio. So they get forced to sell the good stuff, as you do in any distress scenario. And they can sell the supermarkets because they get that those are performing assets, and those are the sort of things that they're selling.
So one of the very important things in the REIT sector, specialist REIT sector in particular, is how quickly you can deploy the capital. So it's a bit of a disaster if you're us and you raise a whole lot of money and then you sit on it for 6 months, 9 months, and you can't invest it because there's a massive drag on that cash. Our modus operandi is to line up two or three acquisitions in advance, get very advanced on terms, price agreed with the vendors, and then go and raise money and deploy it as quickly as we can. So our track record of delivery is that on average we've deployed our equity in 4 weeks, and fully levered we've been deployed in 6 weeks, which is I think a record in this space, and that's how we intend to continue operating going forwards. We IPO'd last summer in July, raised 100 million. We deployed that in 6 weeks. We did a small raise in November to buy a specific store and deployed that again in 6 weeks. And then we came back in May and raised 65 million. And again, that was a 6 week deployment period to buy two stores, despite having our year end in the middle of that period. This chart just shows you the impact of those contracted rental uplifts. So what this does is it assumes RPI at sort of Bloomberg rates of 3.2%. And it just shows you, if you take June 19, that'll be our annualised rent in June 19. It'll be 16.7 million. If you express that over what we paid for the properties, that's a 5.1% yield. The following year, because of the growth in the rents, that's a 5.4% yield. Now, actually, so what that means is if you invest now, effectively your yield on your investment will go up over time because of the rent reviews. What will actually happen in practice, of course, is that property yields should stay flat, or you know, we actually think they're probably tightened a bit. And so values will go up too, so our NAV will increase. So what you'll probably see is you'll get capital appreciation on the share price, the dividend yield will stay somewhat constant. And then this is just looking a little bit at the asset management plan. So this is why we like these big flexible sites. So you know, we could just buy the assets and earn the income on the assets. We think there are much more interesting things we can do with these sites to add further value for our shareholders. So in general, we think we can deploy shareholder cash and earn sort of 10% yield on cost in what we do. And so that's split between, as I said, doing sustainability projects for the operators. So that's putting solar panels onto the roof of the store. It's putting a combined heat and power plant next to the store. Tesco's, for example, has pledged that it's going to source all of its electricity from renewable sources by the end of 2019, which is quite a big statement because they're actually the biggest private sector user of electricity in the UK. They use 3% of all of the UK's electricity generation. So they are very keen, I hesitate to say desperate, to find people to help them to do that. So they're very excited about the fact we're going to help them do that on their stores. And we're currently working through projects on Bristol and Thetford to pilot that with them. We're close to getting heads of terms signed. At the same time, we're talking to them about putting drive-through pods onto those car parks. There's a lot of demand. If you follow Costa Whitbread story, you'll hear that, you know, they think they've gone X growth on the high street and their next big growth sector is doing drive-through restaurants. If you drive around the country, you see Starbucks popping up all over the place where Little Chefs used to be. That's exactly the market we're targeting. And again, we can make very attractive returns from putting those in onto the site. So these aren't major movers of value. They're incremental value we can add. But it's all valuable when we can deploy, you know, several million pounds per site and earn 10% yield on cost versus the 5% we're earning on the original asset.
So that's pretty much it. I mean, you just think of us as an income plus story. So we're very simple, probably the simplest company you'll look at. You can all model us in Excel within 10 minutes to within literally a pound of our lives. So you can see the predictability of the cash flows and the dividend coverage. So you can see we can afford to pay the dividend. You'll get a little bit of plus because we can sweat these assets. And as we sweat these assets by dropping your Costa Coffee or your Starbucks or your McDonald's and we do some solar, you'll get a few million pounds of incremental capital value over the life of the trade. However, it's that long-term predictability, 19 years of lease length, which gives you a lot of security. And it's a stock you can put in your portfolio and hopefully sleep well at night. Just to reiterate, we're only buying omnichannel stores. We believe in that online growth. We're big believers in online. Future model of groceries where we're investing. We're ignoring most of the market and cherry picking the best stuff. We've already paid 5.5p. We've already put the dividend up, showing the confidence in our cash coverage. Top performing stores, big four strong tenants on long leases. And don't forget that RPI. We think we're the cheapest source of inflation and protection across any asset class. We're on the main market of the London Stock Exchange. We are a specialist fund because, well, the nature of what we do. And that means you have to be a sophisticated investor to buy us. I assume most of you have already self-certified as sophisticated investors, but if you haven't, you either have to sign that box or check it with your execution guys to make sure you can buy us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening.
Team provenance, sorry.
So I've had 20 years of experience in real estate. I spent an awful lot of that doing sale and leaseback transactions. That was in the banking sector. And I've executed about 4 billion of sale and leasebacks and leasing transactions with the supermarket operators. About 3.5 billion of that was sale and leasebacks with the operators.
Yeah, my background is very much an advisory, again, within the banking sector. But my previous day job was working advising the operators themselves. So that would have been board CEO, CFO level with the operators and the likes of Tesco, Sainsbury's. Hence, we have a very close working relationship with the operators. And we're working very much as their partner as we try and build this proposition.
As you are probably aware, IFRS 16
yes.
comes into force on the 1st of January 2019.
Yes.
How is that going to affect your business?
Yeah, it's very interesting. So the first important thing to think about is IFRS 16 is going to bring all these leases on balance sheet for companies. And so they used to do sale and leasebacks in order to get off balance sheet financing, which was more expensive than their balance sheet debt. And they're not going to do that anymore. So the first thing is that the supply of long leased real estate or any kind of assets to high quality covenants is going to dry up completely because there's going to be no new sale and leasebacks at all. The only people who are going to do leasing are going to be lower credit quality companies who are doing it to get cheaper financing, where it's effectively like a secured financing. But for Tesco, Sainsbury's, yeah, any of the big sort of investment grade companies, they're not going to do it anymore. So then the question is, what are our tenants going to do, given that they've got these huge leased portfolios? Well, they are pretty focused in the long term, and I think Tesco's are probably in the lead on this, on buying in the freehold properties that they want to operate out of in the long term. They have limited free cash flow to do that. So Tesco's, prior to us actually, Tesco's was the biggest buyer of supermarkets in the market in 2017 and 2016. They've just recently bought back another store, they announced in their last update to the market. So we expect to sort of coexist alongside them buying back stores. We talk, we cooperate with them very closely. We think we can both coexist and get to where we want to be. It's quite possible that in the long run, we get bought out by the supermarkets because they will want these stores back. We know these are stores that they want in the long term.
It's fair to say that part of the reason we're doing this is because we saw IFRS 16 coming and we wanted to get out ahead of that.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. I had three questions on your debt. And also, could you tell us a little about your fee terms, what your fees are?
Yes, we should.
So on the debt, firstly, are each of the properties in an SPV with non-recourse debt attached?
So should we just take them one at a time? So, the answer is they're all in SPVs. We have two banking facilities, and those facilities are cross-collateralized across the properties that they finance, but there's no guarantee from the PLC. So HSBC has security over everything except for Sheffield and Ashford, and Bayerische Landesbank has Ashford and Sheffield as security.
We should mention while we're on debt that we have the lowest cost of funding in the entire property sector. So Bayerische Landesbank just lent us 5-year money at LIBOR plus 125 basis points.
That's answered my third question. Thank you.
Okay.
Or half answered it. Yes. So the second one was, what are the typical covenants attached to the debt?
So the main ones are a loan-to-value covenant. We've got lots of headroom on that. So that's at 65%, and we're running in the sort of low 40s loan-to-value. And an interest cover covenant, which we're, because of where rates and margins are, we've got oodles of space on that one.
And then just to say, we eliminated a lot of the rate risk, because obviously buying property companies, you've got to be very concerned about interest rate risk. So we have actually swapped our facility with HSBC to fixed, which gives us an all-in cost of debt of about 2.4%, but that's a fixed cost of debt. Including
so that's the Bayerische Landesbank one swapped to fixed, right?
On the Bayerische facility. On the HSBC facility, we bought a cap, so we have an interest rate cap just to cover our tail risks. So there is a hedge ratio, is the way they counted, look at 80% hedged within our debt.
Well, that has answered my third question. Thank you very much.
We didn't do fees, though. So we do fees very quickly, yes. So we're set up as an externally managed vehicle. So Atrato Capital is the name of the manager, and Ben and I sit in Atrato. Mm-hmm. The fees are very clean and very institutional. We wanted to make this very institutional from the get-go. So there is only one fee, and that fee starts at 95 basis points of NAV, and that drops to 45 basis points of NAV as we grow. And to align ourselves incentive-wise with shareholders, we receive 25% of that in shares.
So there's no performance fee, no other fees that come to us. And we obviously also made a pretty large investment in the IPO. So we're, in terms of alignment, we're going to have a lot of stock over time.
How much?
So we in the IPO, we invested about £1 million each, I don't have any liquid assets anymore, and that's growing as we get 25% of the fee in shares.
We set the vehicle up to invest ourselves, and we started off thinking maybe we'd do a fund. We discovered REITs and the tax status of REITs, and if you're going to invest in property in the UK, investing in a REIT, you have no corporation tax, you have no capital gains tax, and if you're investing in your SIPs or your ISAs, you can take a huge dividend, also tax-free. So it's the REIT status for property investors is fantastic. So we realised we had to go down the REIT route to do this.
Hi. If in your large sites you're getting more and more free car park space because fewer and fewer people are driving there because they're buying online, which, as you say, is a trend that's likely to increase, why would it be attractive for people to open, say, a drive-through restaurant there when they're going to get fewer and fewer customers?
I mean, there's still very large footfall onto these sites. So Ashford gets, I think it's 50,000 customers a month going through there, which is huge footfall for a drive-through restaurant to be adjacent to. And we sort of, I think our base case for what happens in grocery is that you'll get a continued growth of online, but actually, the model is going to be a hybrid, which is why you want to own omnichannel stores, because people fundamentally like shopping for fresh in person. Buying what they're going to eat tonight and the bottle of wine that goes with it, that's the thing you want to do in person. The boring bit is what you want to get delivered to you there's some American consultants who call that, you buy the mission critical stuff online, so the loo rolls and the washing powder and everything. But you know, the interesting stuff you want to go and select yourself. And so we're buying stores that sort of fulfill both sides of that. So we don't ever really expect it to go, you know, 100% online or even probably even 50% online in total. And so you'll still have footfall onto those sites.
The UK has the highest adoption of grocery online in the world, and it's currently 6%. So 94% of grocery is still in store and 6% is online. But we think that 6% is going to grow exponentially and we want to be part of it. But it's going to take a long time and a great, you know, maybe 10 years before we get to the likes of 30%. But that's all good for us. We get more, as you say, we get more car parking spaces back, and that store becomes even more critical to the network of the operator.
So I'm just interested, but in a store where they're doing the omnichannel method, do they put the stuff on the shelves and then just pick it off the shelves?
Yeah.
It's remarkably inefficient.
Well, it isn't. I mean, the problem with stocking in a separate warehouse, it's actually, what it does for them actually is it gives them better stock availability on the shelves, because as they go around and pick off the shelf, they also have a button to say that it's low on the shelf and they call it up from the stock room. So it means you're turning everything at the same rate. So you've got less wastage, particularly in sort of fresh. You haven't got two different stores, which was the Amazon problem of saying, like, you know, whenever anything got anywhere near its sell-by date, they just have to put it in the bin, which is why they throw more bananas than they sell. And they're pretty efficient on the picking. The other thing to think about is lots of the stuff that comes in on the back of a lorry comes now in a sort of a cardboard pallet that just slots straight onto the shelf. And again, so you're not really double handling it. You're just taking one big box of stuff, slotting it onto a shelf, and then someone's either picking it to put it in a basket or they're picking it to put it in a plastic bag to go to you.
And they tend to pick online. They tend to pick in zones as well. So they'll pick in zones and they'll pick for six baskets at a time. A lot of the automation is happening at the back. So if you speak to the Tesco guys, they say they love Ocado because Ocado spends a fortune on R&D. And if you just look at the latest Erith facility they've just opened, which is a fantastic technology facility, but they spent 50 million on the building and then they put 120 million of robotics into it. So 170 million total capex for one new warehouse. Ocado has an EBIT of 20 million and it's increased their capacity by about 20-25%. So hopefully, if it all goes well, they make an extra 5 million a year, but they spent 170 million putting the thing in. But Tim Steiner will say, you're looking at the wrong thing. Right, that's R&D. We're going to be the best grocery software, hardware company in the world, and everyone's going to buy our technology. Don't worry about making profit on what I'm doing today. And I think that's actually a very good software play, and we like Ocado as a software company. And what Tesco will say is we like that because 2 years later, Siemens produced something similar, and we can adopt the best bits of it at a reasonable cost.
It's so much cheaper.
Yeah, a lot of the time now, when they finish picking the basket on the trolley and it goes out the back, it goes onto conveyor belts, it gets put into the right order to go on the back of the van. And that technology is definitely being embraced. And maybe you get more and more technology, particularly with dry goods, out the back rather than having to come to a well-lit front piece of the store. But refrigeration is the massive thing as well. Like, refrigeration costs are huge. As Ben said, Tesco are the single largest user of electricity in the UK, 3% of everything generated. A lot of that's going on refrigeration. So you don't want to pay for two lots of refrigeration, you want to pay for one.
Back to fees. Yes. You've got 20-year life of these supermarket
yes.
thing. And you 0.95%, so over 20 years, that's nearly 20% you're receiving for that. If you've got 250 million of assets, 0.95 is about 2.5 million a year, 25% in being paid in shares, I think you said.
Yep.
Can you tell us how many staff you've got and how many people are involved in this business?
Absolutely.
So to get an idea of how much you're receiving.
Yes. Your Excel spreadsheet will get you there very fast. So right now, actually, you'd want us to be an externally managed vehicle because the cost of running the thing is probably slightly more than we're receiving because we're still quite small. But as we grow over the course of the time, don't forget, we don't stay at 95 basis points. We drop to 45. And just for the record, 45 basis points is the lowest fee in the REIT sector. So we set a new low in the fees. But you know, the value proposition for us is we can grow this quite large and we can make money, you know, more at the latter end of the cycle than the beginning. But right now we have 7 employees, soon to be more, as we grow this. And you know, each of those are relatively well-paid individuals who have lots of experience in this space. So that is currently, you know, plus all the other costs of running the thing, more than we were likely to take in fees. But we see the long-term, you know, upside, which is attractive to us, which is why we're, you know, working hard at this point in time.
I mean, the other thing to say, if you look at it in sort of total expense ratio terms, externally managed is definitely the way you want to invest, you know, at the startup stage. Because, I mean, right now, we've got 320 million of assets, 190 million of market cap, and our total expense ratio is about 1.25% of market cap, which is pretty competitive, I think, in terms of you know, asset management in general of these kinds of assets. And obviously, that will reduce as we grow the fund in percentage terms.
My other point was about you holding the assets for 20 years.
Oh yeah.
And you do a lot of work at the beginning and at the end, but you're taking out 0.95% or maybe 0.45% all the way through.
Yeah, but Ed, think about it. The returns to the shareholders should start at 5.5 per annum and grow with RPI from there. So if we do nothing and you just assume Bloomberg forwards for RPI, then you should have an IRR as a shareholder of 7%. We think we can sweat these assets. We think we can get your IRR to 10% on this stuff. And then, you know, you've paid us somewhere between 0.5% and 95 bips over that run. So the question for you is that a reasonable share of the upside?
Steve, thank Ben, you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.